supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. From WHYY in Philadelphia, I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show today, garbage, kitchen waste. I know that's redundant with the rest of the show sometimes, but this is the time of year when many people want to start composting. And they don't have the right materials. They use kitchen waste alone, and that goes bad fast. We're also going to help a listener who made a compost bin, several bins actually, filled with nothing but kitchen waste last season. We're going to try to help him make something decent out of that mess. Before that, though, lots of your messy phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Christine, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my phone call.
Well, thank you for making it, Christine. Where are you?
I'm in Syracuse, New York.
Oh, very good. Yeah. I know the area well. My college friends moved to Syracuse after school, and they stayed there.
Oh, it's a wonderful place to raise a family. It's wonderful. My question is, I bought a small house up by the university and am renting it out to a company for handicapped people.
Mm-hmm.
And they love the house. We completely renovated it. However, further back, I would say probably 50 feet into the backyard, when we have a lot of rain, that is very, very wet. So like up to your ankles wet.
That's bad, yeah.
We have a lot of deer there, but at any rate, people have told me multiple different things about, you know, you can plant a tree there, you can plant a weeping willow there, and then everybody says, no, don't plant a weeping willow because it's going to make a mess in your yard. And what I want to do is get this dried up somehow and be able to put a walk-in type garden for these handicapped people to be able to do some gardening back
Ooh,
there.
Ooh, okay. No matter what we do, is there another area where the garden could be? Because if there's a perennial wet spot, it's always going to be difficult. There are very few plants that can survive growing in constantly wet soil. And I think I know what your friends were suggesting with the willow. Some people have this idea that big trees can magically suck up hundreds of gallons of water and somehow transport it to another dimension. That's not how it works. If this were a lawn with a little bit of wet issues in Syracuse, you would wait until late summer, midsummer, really, in Syracuse, and you would have it core aerated. That's where they use a big machine to pull plugs out of the soil, and that reduces the compaction of the soil so that there's less clay in the soil, there's less everything in the soil, and it tends to drain better after that. It sounds like you need a more severe fix, and that's called drain tiles. That's where you would get a landscaper with experience to come in, and they would excavate the area when it was dry. And although it's called drain tiles, it's really more a system of piping that captures the water and takes it away to another spot. If it's that wet, there must be a low area nearby where the water could be drained off to. I have to warn you that it may never be really suitable for gardening. Although you say the people in the house are handicapped. Are they in wheelchairs?
No. So these are developmentally delayed adults. There's three of them that live there, and they just love having this space because normally they're put in apartment houses. And
sure.
So to have a house in a neighborhood is just like a dream for them. But there are a lot of deer there. So for the gardening, I wanted one where they didn't have to bend over, so it would be a walk-in, but you'd have to have chicken wire around it because of the deer, right?
Well, a chicken wire are not going to keep out deer, and what you tend to do when you get into that discussion, you tend to have a professional install real deer fencing. Here's my suggestion. One thing I like as I get older, I'm calling tabletop gardening, and that's where you get a couple of big picnic tables or similar structures. And then you get nice size containers and you plant herbs and lettuces and flowers in the containers so that literally it can be at arm's height. And also if you use true old style picnic tables, they can sit down then you could fence that area in, because the other solution would be a motion-activated sprinkler that you would point at the area that would come on whenever a big object got in its path. But that's going to keep spraying your residents. I know, because I get sprayed.
Right.
And that's why I need new coffee mugs every week. I'm always dropping mine when I get sprayed with water. But you want to drain that. You don't want a mosquito reservoir out there where these people are getting bitten all the time. All right?
Drain tiles. Got it. Thank you so much, Michael.
All right. Good luck, Christine. 1-888-346-9499. David, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi there.
Hello, David. How are you, sir?
I'm in great shape. Thanks.
Well, good for you. That makes one of us. Where is David in great shape?
Well, this is State College, Pennsylvania.
All right. Very good. Where I visited this past spring. I had a great time there. You've got very enthusiastic gardeners in State College.
Oh, yeah. There's a really good crew up here.
All right. What can we do for David in State College in Happy Valley?
Well, I've got a weed, you might say, in the lawn. It's a vine-type structure that started around my raised beds. And it looks like a miniature strawberry.
Okay, so for many years I was telling people that all of the wild strawberry vines were just ornamentals that escaped and the strawberries taste bland. Do the strawberries, do the little fruits that form on your vines, do they look like buttons or do they look like miniature strawberries?
They look like miniature strawberries, about a quarter of an inch in diameter.
Have you ever tried to eat them?
No, they're red.
They're red?
Cautious about eating. Yeah, they're red.
Well, that means they're ripe. Why would you not eat them when they were red? You wouldn't want to eat them when they were...
You know, unless you know what you're doing, some of these things are not to be eaten.
Right, right. Okay. And you're smart to do that. But I'm telling you, it sounds like you have the more unusual of the two plants. There is an escaped ornamental ground cover that gives a lot of people spielkes. And that is a long vine that has strawberry-like flowers, and it has little red fruits, but they're distinctly round and button-shaped, and they have no flavor. There is also a native wild strawberry relation of the strawberry I always talk about on the show, the Alpine strawberry, the little strawberries that originally were discovered in the French woodlands 400 or 500 years ago. And people collected them because they were so good to eat. And then eventually plant breeders used them to create the modern strawberry, the giant strawberries we have today. They're all related. Only in the past couple of years have I learned that there are wild strawberries that are actually native to Pennsylvania that are like the Alpine strawberries, but the Alpines grow in clumps, and these strawberries grow on long vines. So I guarantee they're not poisonous. In the coming spring, I'm going to ask you to let some of them grow long enough to develop and then taste them. You may decide that you want to keep them because if they are true wild strawberries, that little tiny strawberry has all the flavor of a big strawberry. They're little flavor bombs. They're amazing. Okay, so now basic lawn care. Who cuts your lawn?
I do.
How high is it cut?
Well, not terribly short.
In the coming season, I want you to get out there with a ruler. Your neighbors probably think you're crazy already, so let's just lean into it. And put that ruler down at different spots. Really push it till it hits the soil. To resist weeds, your lawn needs to be at least 3 inches high. You're probably going to have to raise the cutting height on your lawnmower to 3 inches high. When you do that, the grass can generally overtake any weed without you taking action. Do you feed the lawn or treat the lawn?
No.
You don't put any fertilizer down either?
No, I'm too lazy.
Okay. Do you collect the clippings?
Normally, I don't collect clippings, only when the leaves fall in the fall and then they get put on the raised bed. But generally, the clippings fall right back in the lawn.
Okay, good, good. I want you to continue putting the clippings back on your lawn. Make sure that you have a brand new blade or a freshly sharpened blade in the spring to defeat weeds. Grass needs to be strong and healthy. So if you're not feeding it anything extra, you want it to get all of the benefits of the nitrogen in its own grass clippings. You also don't want to tear the grass blades apart. So every season you really need to start out with a sharp blade. Now, if you don't like the strawberries, if they don't taste good or you don't think it's worth the trouble, what you want to do is wait till the lawn is totally saturated or saturated it yourself, and then pull up those vines. They come out of the soil very easily, but only from wet soil. So if you pull them, they'll come up like a telephone line. There'll be a lot of distance in between root systems. So just take little segments of your lawn at a time, and when it's wet, pull those weeds out. And then if you probably raise the cutting height on your mower, you're probably going to have to make it twice as high as it is, and cut with a sharp blade, the lawn should be able to resist invasion by these plants.
Okay. If they do taste good, then I should just let them grow.
Yeah. All right. Good luck, David.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will speak at the Haverford Home and Garden Show on Sunday, April 15th. At the Bayshore Center in Port Norris, New Jersey on Thursday evening, April 26th, and at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Exton, PA on Saturday, May 12th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with our take on your garbage and lots more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And High Caliper Growing, creators of the original Smart Pot, Big Bag Bed, and other fabric growing containers made in the USA. Remember, the container you use affects the plants you grow. SmartPots.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, you know when you buy one of those recycled black plastic composters with a locking lid and it comes with a little note card inside saying the things you can include, and it says leaves, waste paper, grass clippings, kitchen waste, all that kind of stuff? Well, most of that information is wrong, and a lot of people go buy it and wind up with a composter full of kitchen waste, which several months later is a composter full of worse-looking kitchen waste. We'll tell you what to do if you're in this dilemma and how to avoid it when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, lots more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Bill, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Bill. How are you, sir?
Fine, sir.
And where is Bill fine?
In Bensalem, Pennsylvania.
Not far from Philadelphia.
Nope.
All right. What can we do for Bill in Bensalem?
I have a holly. I guess they were small plants that I put around a well, and they're got to be at least 20, 25 years old. I've been cutting them back a little bit, but I'm half afraid to cut too much off for fear that I'll kill the plant. And, of course, the timing, too. I think it's this time of year to do it, but I'm not sure. I did go online and watch a video of somebody trimming holly, and they were saying about don't cut down below the joint. But there's a lot of joints on one branch, and I'm kind of there's a gray area there. I thought maybe if I just cut above the joint, whichever one I decide to trim. But I'm just concerned about how much to take off. They're probably between 6 and 7 foot, some of the branches now.
I know a lot of joints in Philly, Bill, if you want to come in and hang out. I have no idea what that pruning advice was. The internet is the most dangerous information source in the world. I mean, nobody has to get vetted. Nobody has to know what they're doing. Nobody has ever had to take a class or read a book or subscribe to horticultural journals to go on YouTube and make a video. You're much better off with somebody showing you how to cut hair because you can see what happens. Now, hollies are actually very prunable. There is a technique. For instance, sometimes a holly will get ice damaged or something, or the top will get weirdly out of shape. One of the local botanic gardens told me this. In the spring, after new growth appears, you can actually cut a holly back almost to the ground, which is like a foot.
Wow.
Yeah, and it will regrow. Now, the warning with that is it won't look like a holly for 2 years, and it'll take like 5 years to regain any kind of shape. I'm actually experimenting with a holly I was given years ago in doing this because the top got all misshapen, and there's some nice new growth coming out of the bottom. One of these years, perhaps the coming year, I'm going to cut off the top and really pay attention to pruning that bottom growth as it comes along. So what will happen to your holly plants? Do they have berries on them?
Well, they do now, and that's why I didn't want to cut them too before because they'll have to wait a few years for berries to appear again?
No. They actually take pruning quite well. Right now, they're dormant. Right now would not be a bad time to go out and prune them, but even better would be to wait until all chance of frost is gone, because there's a chance right now you could go out and prune them on a nice warm day. We could get a nice warm spell, but then we could get freezing temperatures for a week, and the new growth you stimulated would be damaged. So at this point in time, it's better to wait until they start growing again or until you're sure we're not going to get frost in your area somewhere between May 15th and June 1st. And then you can go out there and reduce them in size. And frankly, what I want you to do is just look at them. Go out on day one, do a little bit of pruning, take off some of the stuff that bothers you, whether it's height or whether it's a side blocking a window. But do like one third of the pruning that you think you want to do. And then come out on day two, take a look at your work, do a little more if you think you need to. And do that over the course of a week, because most people, and especially men, no offense, when they get pruners in their hand, often you can't even find the stump after they're finished.
Right.
You know, it's always better to prune less over a long period of time than to try to do it all at once. Because, again, you really have the opportunity to shape these plants, to make them really look like you want them to look like. And don't worry about joints unless you're going out for a drink. You know, I don't know where that advice came from. Do a little bit at a time, and then what will happen is the unpruned areas are still going to flower. You won't see it. You really have to go out there and carefully study the plants to see the flowers that appear on holly. They're so what are called insignificant. But there will be flowers still on the parts that you haven't pruned. And then if they're pollinated, those flowers will turn into berries. And you'll have holly berries at Christmas again, just on the part of the plant that's left behind. Pruning them will not affect the berries on the part of the plant that's still alive.
Okay. I was really concerned because it literally looks pretty with the snow on them and the red berries. I go out and look at them quite a bit when they're like that. So
they can
I don't want to miss a year of that.
They can be very attractive plants. You know, you say they're too big, they're too wild. Don't go nuts the first year. I mean, if you see you're cutting more than 20% of the plants, be done. And then you can prune them again the following year. The best way to work with plants like this is to do a little bit of pruning every year so you never have to do dramatic pruning.
That sounds great.
All right. Good luck, Bill.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, sir. Take care.
And I like your show.
Oh, thank you. I like it, too.
All right, thank you.
Keeps me off the streets. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Bill. Take care.
Yeah, you too.
1-888-346-9499. John, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how you doing, Mike? Glad you're having me on.
I'm glad to have you, John. How are you, sir?
I'm good today. Sun's out, so ready for the spring, I hope.
Okay, so where is John good?
I am in Stony Brook, Long Island, New York.
Oh, that's so beautiful out there. I love that area.
Nice.
Yeah, it's nice water. What can we do for John from Long Island?
Last winter, I have a dwarf peach tree.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I should say I had. And during the winter, one heavy snowstorm, the whole top of the tree got filled with snow and snapped the whole peach tree from the top. So I cut it off at the top as high as I can and was wondering if something would sprout out, and sure enough, it did last spring. And now I have about 8 to 10 branches off of one shoot. And I was wondering if that would grow. Should I leave it? Should I cut the top down? Or what should I do with that?
You're a maniac, John. I mean, do you, you know, you sound like the kind of guy who buys a hard top and uses a chainsaw to make it a convertible, you know?
Well, I had no choice but to, you know, cut it, and, you know, because there was nothing left of the tree. I cut it at the top of the trunk as high as possible.
Now, John, I've never heard this happening to a peach tree, you know, conifers and stuff. Had you been pruning this peach tree?
Yeah, I prune it every so often. I pruned it, and it was delicious peaches. That's why I'm kind of upset about it.
Okay,
you know?
I just can't even imagine, because a peach tree should have such an open canopy that snow wouldn't hang on it very well.
Yeah, well, this was just a bad snowstorm and freezing weather just kept the snow on it. And
okay,
it,
so now, describe to me how this, there is one branch with shoots.
Right. I cut it off at the top about 7 foot high.
Okay.
And then about 2 feet below that, one branch sprouted out. It's about maybe an inch thick. And from there, about 8 other little branches, you know, about 2 feet.
Now, when was this snowstorm? It wasn't this year. It was last year, right?
No, it was last, correct.
Okay. This branch, this bizarre secondary branch that's coming out with these little baby branches, was there all last summer?
Correct.
Okay. Have you examined it carefully for the signs of flower buds?
Yes, last spring, there was some buds, but not many.
Okay, but and I'm talking about this year. I mean, pretty soon peach trees will flower.
No, not yet.
Now, I don't know what you mean by not yet. The flower buds on spring blooming plants are formed the previous year. If you look at your rhododendrons, your azaleas, plants like that that bloom early in the spring, you'll see big fat buds on them.
No, I didn't see any.
But you saw them after the accident?
Well, no, I'm saying the leaves. I saw leaves on the branches.
Oh, okay.
Not
so,
the buds.
So you had leaves, but no flower buds. I think it's probably a waste of time, and it sounds dog ugly. If
that's
you don't,
true. It's definitely ugly coming out from the side.
Yeah. Why don't you just cut it down and plant a new one?
Mm.
Let's see if it flowers. If it flowers and you get a couple of fruits on it, then play the game. But do you really want to sit with this thing outside for 3 years, looking raggedy, when you could probably put a new plant in the ground this spring?
This is true. I was just partial to it because it produced delicious peaches, you know, nice white flesh inside, really delicious.
Well, get the same variety.
I don't remember exactly which one it is, but I'll try and do that.
Yeah, try to trace back your purchase records.
Okay. I appreciate your help there, Mike.
Yeah, and it sounds like you love cutting things down, so this could be fun.
Well, I had really no choice. It was toppled in my yard, and I had nothing else to do but cut it, you know?
Okay, well, so, go out there and do it again, man.
I guess I'll do it again. More firewood for me.
Yeah. All right, John. Good luck, sir.
Thank you very much.
1-888-346-9499. Lorraine, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Lorraine. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I am just ducky. Thank you for asking. Where is Lorraine doing well?
I'm in Havertown, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia.
Correct.
All right. What can we do for you?
Well, last summer, I had a new sod lawn installed in my front yard.
Okay.
And it's lovely. And it's my intention to keep it as pristine as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to know how I can treat my lawn for fertilization and insect control to keep it from getting overgrown by any weeds and as strong as I possibly can. And again, I just really want it to have a green velvety look like
okay.
It does now.
Is it a small lawn?
Well, you know what? From the invoice that I got, I see that they put in 3,000 square feet of sod.
Wow.
That helps, yeah.
That was an expensive installation.
It was tremendously expensive, and that's the reason I really want to make sure that I don't lose my lawn. I want to make every effort to keep it healthy and beautiful.
The game is yours to lose, so to speak, because mm-hmm. when you start out with sod, you start out with a carpet.
Yeah.
And if you avoid making mistakes, you shouldn't have any problems whatsoever. Okay. Now, I'll just go over the basics because I find the installation of sod really interesting. Mm-hmm. So when they prepared the surface, they took away a lot of old soil, right, to make sure?
Yes, they did. And they installed 6 yards of topsoil.
Okay. And it was green and healthy throughout the rest of the summer and fall.
It was lovely. We had an irrigation system put in right before they laid the sod down so
okay.
that I was able to water it and keep it moist.
Can you control the irrigation system? How often does it water and for how long?
Well, you know, it's a seasonal adjustment, and I have a Wi-Fi controller so that even when I'm away, I can make sure that it's getting the right amount of water, depending on the weather conditions. I can't really recall how we had it, but initially I was having to keep it moist, you know, pretty continually. And then it evened off after it looked as though it had taken root. We could water it a little bit less.
Okay, so the rule for a lawn is real easy.
Okay.
It's 1 inch of water per week when we don't get rain. Lawns need to dry out in between waterings. They should never be watered every day, and they should never be watered for short periods of time.
Right.
Most lawns don't need watering in the spring or the fall because there's adequate moisture from nature itself. The time when lawns can be stressed is in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But your lawn, the way it was installed, it sounds, it should have deep enough roots that it could go a long time without watering. Now, when you don't get rain, you don't want that system to run for 20 minutes
mm-hmm.
every day or every other day. You want it to run for a couple of hours once a week.
Right.
Because it's buried, right?
The thing is underneath the sod, the whole piping system, but the water, of course, sprinkles above it and waters it from rains down on it.
Okay, so it does pop up sprinklers.
Yes, pop up, right.
Okay. That's not as effective as if it was just the weeping units underneath the roots because you're losing water to evaporation. So if that's the case, if it's pop-up sprinklers, you never want them to come on in the evening. You don't want the lawn to stay wet overnight.
Okay.
You want them to come up at like 5 o'clock in the morning and run till 8 o'clock in the morning once a week.
Okay.
Are you going to cut the lawn?
We actually have somebody doing it. We used to do our own lawn, but it just became too much of a chore for us. So now we do have somebody to come to mow.
Okay. So you want to make sure that when they leave, the lawn is 3 inches high.
Okay.
From soil to top of blade.
Okay.
And you always want them to leave the clippings behind.
Okay.
Those clippings are 10% nitrogen, and the rest is water. And that's all a lawn needs is nitrogen mm-hmm. and water.
Okay.
If you want, you can give your lawn a gentle feeding in the spring
mm-hmm.
and a gentle feeding in the fall. No chemical fertilizers. They're just going to burn up your lawn.
Right.
You want to get a nice organic fertilizer with a very low number on the label, nitrogen not higher than 10. All fertilizer labels have three numbers on them, NPK for nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. You want nothing bigger than a 10 for the first number, and you don't need the phosphorus or potassium. Those are the big water pollutants.
Okay.
So you can use corn gluten meal or another natural fertilizer. But, you know, since your lawn is sod and was recently installed and you're going to leave the clippings behind, you're really not going to need to feed it for the first year.
Okay.
That lawn has already been really fed. And you don't need to treat for weeds and you don't need to treat for insects. There are no insects that are going to bother your lawn other than perhaps grubs.
Okay.
If you have Japanese beetles in the summertime, you can put down what's called milky spore disease. You'll find this at any garden center.
Okay.
The most effective time to put it down is mid to late summer. They'll sell it in the spring, but it doesn't work in the spring.
Right.
And other than that, your lawn should need no treatments whatsoever.
Sounds wonderful.
All right. Good luck.
Well, thanks so much for your good advice, and I enjoy your show.
Oh, thank you so much. Good luck with your lawn.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear in beautiful Cortez, Colorado on Saturday, May 19th as part of their Tez Talk series. Yes, that Colorado podcast, pals. Then I'm off to the legendary Chautauqua Institute, where I will speak at noon on Monday, July 30th and Tuesday, July 31st. That's at Chautauqua in upstate New York. But don't go looking for all the details in the events section of our website just yet, because I'll be right back with our take on your garbage and lots more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And High Caliper Growing, creators of the original Smart Pot, Big Bag Bed, and other fabric growing containers made in the USA. Remember, the container you use affects the plants you grow. SmartPots.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a couple of minutes, we will get to the question of the week: why you shouldn't try to compost kitchen waste all by itself, and what you can do if you're already trying to do that and are faced with a stinky mess. In the meantime, a couple more of your non-stinky phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Mary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. Hi, Mike. Nice to talk with you.
It's nice to talk with you, Mary. Where are you?
In Landenburg, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Very good. And that's Landenburg. Is that out by Lancaster County?
Yeah, near Hocassin.
All right. What can we do for Mary?
We just moved here in August, and I'm still learning the landscaping around this house. We have a crepe myrtle in our front yard, and it had beautiful red flowers in the early fall, and now it looks brown and brittle. We wonder if it might be frost damage, and I'm wondering how to bring it back to life as far as pruning. What should we do? We really like it.
Okay. Crepe myrtle is a really unusual plant. It comes in two forms. It comes in the form of a shrub with multiple arching branches coming up out of the ground, and it comes in the form of a true tree. These are southern plants. Back 20 years ago, you never saw a crepe myrtle north of Virginia. But as the climate has warmed, the crepe myrtles have migrated down into Maryland, into Delaware, into Pennsylvania. But they are southern plants at heart. And one of the bad things that happened in our region, the whole mid-Atlantic, we had had a really warm winter 2 years ago. And then this winter, we had a very warm fall. And then, boom, all of a sudden, it dropped well below freezing. And a lot of plants were really stunned by that. I'm actually worried about a couple of plants in my front yard. But, you know, spring will tell the tale. Now, is your crepe myrtle the multi-limbed, or is it a tree?
I think it's a tree. It kind of looks like a folded-up umbrella. It goes kind of reaching up, straight up. It's very narrow.
Right. It's a single trunk coming up out of the ground.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Good. And about how tall is it?
Maybe 7 to 8 feet.
Okay, good. So it's nice and manageable. Does it look like it's all in proportion to itself?
Yes, I would say so. Yeah.
Good, because then the previous owners did not commit crepe murder. When you get these plants or you look up pruning instructions on it, it says the crepe myrtle can be cut back to the ground in spring and will still have time to flower in late summer. And that's true, but if you do that year after year, you have this giant elephant's foot coming up out of the ground and then skinny little branches on top of it. So the correct way to prune crepe myrtle is in the spring after new growth. Now, if you don't get any new growth, if you don't get any green growth, then unfortunately the plant did perish. But I don't think that's going to be the case. You know, these are summer blooming plants. They're not four season plants. You know, they're not incredibly attractive over winter time. So we're going to wait for the spring, wait for new growth to appear, and then we're going to wait another 2 or 3 weeks so we don't get surprised by a late frost. And then when you're pretty sure, you know, when the weather guessers are saying it's going to, you know, be well above freezing for the foreseeable future. Let's see, you're where Pennsylvania meets Delaware.
Delaware. Yeah.
You know, we'll call that May 15th, maybe June 1st if you want to be a coward. But then you get out there with a pair of pruners or a pair of loppers, and what I want you to do is reduce the height or the length of every branch by about a foot and a half. You don't want to cut it back real hard, but you do want to reduce wherever there were flowers last year. You want to cut that back by a foot or a foot and a half. Pruning in the spring actually improves the flowering of crepe myrtle. And if you do it gently, you can actually manage to keep the plant the same height almost forever. So the rule going forward is you will always, in the spring, prune off as much growth as the plant put on the previous season. So if you start out with a 6 foot plant, it's 8 foot high by the end of the summer. In the spring, you bring it back down to 6 feet again. That improves the blooming and it brings the flowers closer to where you can see them. Very important not to prune it in the fall. And you really want to wait until all frost is passed in the spring to do it, because these are fast growers and they'll put on a good amount of flowers. But don't assume that it's dead for now. You know, a lot of plants don't look their best after this very weird winter we had. So be patient.
Right.
And I think you're going to see that green growth.
Okay. Oh, thank you. That was so helpful. Really appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you, Mary. Good luck.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Kiana, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello. How are you, Mike?
I am just ducky today, Kiana. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thanks.
And where is Kiana wonderful?
I'm in Houston, Texas.
Excellent. What can we do for Kiana in Houston?
Yes. So I'm new to gardening. I have some plants at home, and I'm finding that I'm having these gnats everywhere in the house now. I've tried some, you know, more environmentally sound solutions like the apple cider vinegar and dish soap, but that didn't really help. And I was curious as to what can get rid of these. What can I do to get rid of these gnats?
Where in the name of goodness did you find a recipe for fungus gnats that told you to use vinegar?
YouTube, of course.
Oh, my goodness. YouTube needs an editor. The world needs an editor. God, if I was in charge, there'd be like 2% left of this stuff on the internet. One thing I want to point out here is vinegar is an herbicide. If you spray enough vinegar on a plant, it will kill the plant. Now, you have correctly identified your pest. Those little things flying around your house plant are fungus gnats. And you cause them, because I can tell without asking any other questions that you are a compulsive waterer. You're afraid your babies are going to shrivel up from drought, and you're over-watering them. Are you watering them every day or something?
No, maybe once a week.
Okay. All right. These gnats are all around in the environment. Sometimes they literally come in with you. Sometimes they come in the soil of house plants, but they can be flying around your door and just come in when you're bringing in the groceries. So they fly around, they lay their eggs in the soil of your house plants. Those eggs hatch into little disgusting wormy creatures, and that's where the fungus comes in. They're eating any fungus in the soil. They're attracted to plants that have a lot of water in their soil because that means a lot of fungus.
Yeah.
So these nasty little white larvae eat the fungus in the houseplant soil, and then they work their way to the surface of the plant, and then they emerge as those annoying flying things that are flying around. Those gnats meet, mate, lay their eggs in the soil, and the cycle repeats. It's actually pretty easy to get rid of them. One thing I want to tell you, though, the secret of houseplants, much better to underwater than to overwater. It's easy to bring back a plant that got a little too dry, but once it's drowned, it's dead. You want to water by weight. Rock those pots. Just rock them back and forth. See when they feel heavy and see when they feel light. If you think your plant needs water, for instance, take a chopstick or something and slide it down into the soil all the way to the bottom of the pot. I know all the advice out there is to water when the surface of the soil feels dry, but that happens in a couple of hours. The roots are still being soaked with water, and those roots need to dry out in between waterings. So if you pull up that chopstick and you see any sign of dampness on it, even at the very bottom, it's really not time to water yet. Now, when the chopstick comes out dry and the plant feels really light, take it to a sink. Put a couple inches of water in the sink. Sit the pot in the sink so the drainage holes can take up the water. Let it sit there for like an hour or two. Then put it in the drain board. Let it drain. And then as you carry it back to its spot, feel how heavy it is now. It's probably three times as heavy as when the plant was dry. And that'll be your indicator in the future. You won't have to use the chopstick test or anything like that. You just rock the pot. If it feels heavy, even if it's been a long time between watering, it doesn't need water. If it feels really light, even if you watered recently, then the humidity in the house was low, or for whatever reason, then it needs to be watered. If you want to get rid of the adults in the house right away while you're doing this, open up a bottle of red wine. And either don't finish it, leave a couple of fingers in the bottom of the bottle, and then just sit the bottle out on the table, or pour the leftovers into little dishes and put those near the house plants. You can do the same thing with vinegar, but I find red wine to be much more attractive. The fungus gnats will throw themselves down into it and drown. And one old-time technique that I find fascinating is go out and get some play sand. And on the surface of your soil, put an inch or two of the sand. It turns out the adults can't fight their way through that layer of sand, and they can't get through to lay their eggs in the soil.
Okay, will do.
All right, Kiana, good luck.
Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, as promised, it is time for the question of the week. Composting kitchen waste can be tricky. Producer of You Bet Your Garden, Alexis Landis, has been called away to a meeting. Taking her place in the pinch is my longtime folk festival friend, Diane Anderson, who happens to be in the studio with us today. Diane, would you be so kind as to read us this week's question?
Sure, Mike. Dan in North Augusta, South Carolina writes, I have filled three large sealed composting bins with fruit and vegetable waste. Pineapple skins, squash skins and seeds, mango and avocado skins and seeds, eggshells, coffee grounds, etc., plus grass clippings and soil. But the material does not break down. I add water and chop up and stir the contents, but it still doesn't break down. I can only guess that we use too much fruit and vegetable waste. We don't want to just put everything in the garbage. How can we get this large amount of material to break down?
You know, this is the classic rookie mistake. They read the list of things that can be put into their composters, and right there it says kitchen waste and grass clippings. So they fill their composters with kitchen waste and grass clippings, just like the list tells them to.
But we have yet to see a list that emphasizes the need for, quote, dry brown materials, like shredded fall leaves in the mix. You've said that, quote, green materials like grass clippings and kitchen waste don't really become finished compost. They just provide food for the organisms that turn the dry browns into black gold.
And it's not a popular stance when I point that out to people. My TED Talk on composting is approaching 1 million views, and I'm always surprised by the number of comments from people who claim to have made compost out of nothing but big piles of kitchen waste. It just does not work that way.
But many people come to composting just because they want to do the right thing with their kitchen waste, and so they pile it up.
Yeah, luckily Dan is using those recycled black plastic composters with locking lids, so at least his vermin problem should be few. The only thing worse than trying to recycle kitchen waste alone in a composter is trying to do it in an open pile where you wind up feeding rats, mice, raccoons, and other mammalian enemies of mankind.
So in the future, Dan needs to shred up lots of fall leaves and make those shredded leaves the bulk of his pile's ingredients. You've said that a ratio of 4 parts shredded leaves to 1 part green waste is ideal.
Yeah, so as soon as the leaves start falling, you need to start shredding them up and either bag them or pile them up in an open bin, so you'll always have a good amount of shredded leaves to add to the mix every time you bring out a load of garbage. A lot of shredded leaves and a little bit of garbage mixed together makes really fine compost.
So what should Dan do with his current crop of non-compost? It really would be a shame if he had to throw it all away.
Well, he has a couple of options. If he has immediate access to dry brown materials, some leftover fall leaves that didn't get raked, old corn stalks, sunflower stalks, browned out ornamental grasses, he can shred them up and make new piles where the garbage is a minor player.
But not shredded newspaper or junk mail because they have no nutritional value. And not wood chips or sawdust because it takes too long to break down.
Exactly right. Now, option two. Turn those stinky bins into giant outdoor worm composters. In most climates, worm bins are indoors only, as the specialized redworms that do the work of turning kitchen waste into wonderful soil can't survive freezing temperatures. But several listeners in more temperate climes have written in to say that they have used redworms in outdoor bins, and it does seem to work well for them. Now, Dan's South Carolina weather, especially from here on out into the summer, should be perfect for keeping the worms alive and active. Just try and get things finished up before the temps soar up into the 90s, as redworms can't take excessive heat either.
And the brown material used as bedding in worm bins is typically shredded newspaper. Is that still the case here outdoors?
Absolutely. I've tried using more, quote, organic bedding materials like shredded leaves in my worm bins. But the redworms clearly do their best work with just shredded black and white newsprint mixed in.
So, how exactly should Dan transmogrify his garbage dumps into worm bins?
Get a supply of composting worms, not earthworms. You can get these specialized red worms online or at hip or independent garden centers. Add some of the worms to each bin, cover them with, let's say, 4 or 5 inches of shredded newsprint, and then add just enough water to keep that newspaper moist. The worm should just do the rest after that, and after a few months, he should have some nice worm castings to use in his garden.
And in the future, he should be sure to collect and shred enough dry brown material as it becomes available to make sure he'll have 4 parts of brown stuff on hand for every part of kitchen waste he'll want to recycle.
And no more grass clippings in the compost. Grass clippings are 10% nitrogen, which is the perfect lawn food, and they should always be left on the lawn.
And if you're in a cooler climate, get a worm bin for your kitchen waste.
Well, those sure were some interesting options for dealing with your kitchen waste, now, wasn't they? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail with links to lots more composting information, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to make off with my legendary leaf largesse. If I don't get out of this studio, we must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please include your location, especially if you're certain that we do not need it. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find the answers to all those questions you were going to send us, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our vice president of production is Terry Murray. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Our engineer today is Adam Staniszewski. Staniszewski, what a wine. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. And special thanks to Amanda McGrath for working the phones in the studio today. Webmasters Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website free of waste. Our associate assistant producer, a production association assistant, is Brett Rader. Completely Composted at Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our editor is still cooking, Al Banks. I'm home cooking, Mike McGrath, and I hope to see dinner on the table before I see you again next week. Got lots of wood ash and want to use it on your landscape? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss the best and worst ways to use your ash, plus your fabulous phone calls. That's on the next You Bet Your Garden.